Okay, I have received quite a few homeworks, so I haven't counted them or got them ready yet. The next homework will be assigned Wednesday because I have to be on a relatively precise schedule at the end of the quarter, so I have enough time to grade them before grading the exam. So they'll be assigned Wednesday, due a week from then. And it's basically going to be Bayesian. You know, take their data set and run it through one of a number of Bayesian programs. Now, it can't be a phylum program because we don't have a Bayesian inference program in phylum. There are numbers of good ones. And in the homework assignment, which will be similar to the one from last quarter, I list, two years ago, I list a number of programs that you might look at. The most widely used one is Mr. Bayes, which is available for, it's a free download. There's a number of others too. So if you want to start, you know, finding a Bayesian program, you can go ahead with that. So before we go on to likelihood ratio tests and bootstraps and things like that, as usual, I'll call for questions on the material we've been covering. And as usual, you'll be caught flat-footed without a question. But maybe somebody actually has one. Stunned silence. I'll have to find some way of getting this part of the question to work. Basically, we're going to talk about ways of using likelihood ratios to do tests. I mean, if you have Bayesian inference, which we've been talking about, you get out a posterior on your tree and also on all on the parameters, that any parameters that you are putting priors on. And you could say, well, how would you make a statistical test based on that? But the actual fact is that Bayesian inference is sort of its own world and doesn't think in terms of statistical tests. It thinks in terms of the posteriors. And you have got from, say, if you've done a Markov chain Monte Carlo-based Bayesian program, you've got a posterior, an estimate, a good estimate of the posterior, which, if you believe your models and you believe your priors, is a believable posterior, and sort of that's what you, in a sense, really need. And turning it into a test is kind of going off into a different statistical framework. Sometimes people will do things like Bayesian intervals, and the most common way of doing that is to take the posterior and sort of chop off the upper 2.5% of it and the lower 2.5%, and then you get a 95% quote confidence interval, but it's really a posterior, it's a credibility interval, and it's not the same kind of machinery as confidence intervals. It gives you the same information, and an interval in which, as far as you know, 95% of the time your truth lies. I know I'm not supposed to say it that way, but for Bayesian inference, that's good. Let's not get into the complications of confidence intervals right now. So I want to show you an alternative, which is using the likelihood curves, the likelihood surfaces, in a likelihood analysis without priors and without posteriors, to place some sort of statistical statements on how much uncertainty there is of estimate in either of the tree or of parameters. And it all comes from R.A. Fisher back in the 1920s. And it's all based upon the assumption that not only are you using likelihood, but you're in a situation where there's a lot of data, where there are, you know, like our counterpart would be long sequences, so you have quite a few sites. And in cases like that, it will turn out, and here I have to wave my hands and say, trust me, and not really give you a detailed justification. It will turn out that the likelihood curve will start looking like a normal distribution roughly centered around the truth. That's assuming, again, that we believe our models. And likely, we won't look at this for a moment, likelihood surfaces with real data, with phylogenies, are not going to look like that. They'll be spread over, there'll be a peak somewhere on some topology and some set of branch lengths. There may be multiple peaks, but let's assume even there's one peak. It'll go down, and finally it'll reach a region where the topology changes, a branch has shrunk to zero, and it'll go off into other tree topology regions. It may have multiple peaks in them, but one of them in one topology will be highest. It won't look very much like a normal distribution. If you collect a lot of data, though, you'll narrow down on the tree topology. So the peak, the high parts of your likelihood surface will be within a region of tree space that is just one topology. And it will be basically showing you the support for not only the maximum likelihood estimate, but things with nearby branch lengths. And then it can start to look like a normal distribution. So it's sort of in the limit where you've really narrowed down to where essentially you're in one tree topology and you're varying branch lengths. Then things can start looking in shape like a multivariate normal distribution. Now, normal distributions have the property, here's this one-dimensional one. Their formula is that this is now a normal distribution, not necessarily a likelihood curve. It does have an area of one under it. It has a peak that's at the predicted mean, the expectation of the variable. And of course, the formula, which many of you will have seen, is some messy constant times e to the minus a quadratic. And that quadratic is just the difference between the value you're looking at and the expectation, which is right in the middle, squared, divided by twice the variance of that normal. Okay. So it has that form. The constant out front, which involves the sigma constant, is just to make it add up to one. Now, often we look at log likelihoods rather than likelihoods. They both convey the same information. If you take the log of this, well, you'll get the log of this constant, which I'm just calling constant stuff there. And then it's the log of e to the something, so it's really just the something. It's minus a half x minus b squared over sigma squared, over twice sigma squared. And that is a quadratic. So basically, the log, the density of a normal distribution, the height, its height, in logarithmic units, its log of its density, is just a quadratic, peaking at the expectation. And that we're going to see allows us to do quite a lot. So in a tree estimation situation where you've got a bunch of parameters, you've got tree topologies, which aren't technically parameters, and you've got parameters of branch lengths, and you've got parameters of the model, we have a likelihood surface, but in the limit with large amounts of data, we're going to assume that it has the shape of a normal distribution. And I'm just waving my hands and hoping I can either persuade you or intimidate you into thinking that. Okay. Now, if you have a statistical estimation problem with large amounts of data where everything is kind of normal, and you look at estimates of some parameter, might be a branch length here, and this way we look at a sufficient statistic from the data. Now, I'm qualifying curiously, but the sufficient statistic is the thing that you, the number that you get from the data that's going to inform the likelihood inference. Now you may say, well, here you're showing a single number as sufficient statistic. What about these tree cases? In tree cases, unfortunately, there aren't single sufficient statistics. There are observed frequencies of DNA patterns, quite a few of them, and so there are multiple sufficient statistics. And here we're just showing one because I only have two dimensions to work with on the projection. So here is your observed data. Suppose we have, we're drawing from distributions, we get this observed data here. And now we're going to say, okay, what does this say about the parameter? Well, we want to get a likelihood curve. And let me see if I get this. I have to say that for different possible parameter values, we're gonna have to work hard here to keep the parameters scale separate from the data scale. For each parameter value, say this one, there is a distribution of this data, of the sufficient statistic thing, of the number that comes from the data. I've drawn it as a normal. And if we look at this parameter value, it tells us where the center of that distribution is, and our observed value of the statistic is here, which means if we start to make, that will be the likelihood for this value of the parameter. Remember, likelihoods are functions of both data and parameters, but the data is fixed, and you're considering them, when you're talking about likelihoods, you're considering them as a function of the parameter value. So we could imagine a scale over here with different parameter values. It's really the same as this here. And this height is the likelihood at that parameter value. Okay. Now let's imagine trying other parameter values. Well, here's a different one. And what I've done is give them different colors. They aren't very visible here, but this is a sort of reddish brown. And if we go to that one, we move this up here where this point is the center of that curve. The height of that curve at the data is here. So over here will be the height of the likelihood curve for that parameter value. And what I'm going to basically say is, if it were true that for each parameter value the distribution looked kind of normal and was kind of the same except it shifted, that's not really true in real cases. But with large amounts of data, it's almost true. Then, as we go trying different parameter values, we're tracing out a likelihood curve over here. And we're doing it by essentially shifting this normal distribution. Here we go to the third value, which is the red curve. We're shifting the normal distribution through this region. As we go up here, the distribution moves correspondingly that way. And the height, the density function, the density we predict at the data gets higher. And so we're just going to shift through the region. Boom, boom. Now the green one, now the blue one, now the purple one, and finally the gray one. And what you'll see is, of course, the likelihood has traced out a curve. Now, okay, that's just really a description of a likelihood for a single parameter and some number we compute from the data that summarizes, that either is the single data point or it's a sufficient statistic. And you may say, okay, you're just telling us what a likelihood is. But what I'm really saying here is, if we get into one of these asymptotic cases where the likelihood ratio test theory is going to hold, it will be a case where we basically have things that look pretty close to normal distributions. And as we change the parameters, we'll be shifting those through the relative region. So the assertion is that in this limiting case, the likelihood curve Now, this is not a density function. It's not, doesn't have the area under it add up to 1 or anything. But the likelihood curve that will be traced out will look also like one of those normal distributions. I should say that the limiting case where you have, you've gone to the limit and everything is getting normal and everything is getting close to the, there are also estimates are getting very close to their true values. That's a kind of utopia. And statisticians have taken in their lighter moments to call it asymptopia. So we're in asymptopia. And then we're going to establish some tests. A test that can be done there, and then we're going to turn around and say, let's go back to real life and maybe we can do the test, maybe not. Okay, so the argument is that this, but in the limit, in asymptopia, the likelihood curve will often look very, very much like a normal distribution. If it does, then, then that previous figure I gave you, I probably should have duplicated it, will say that the log likelihood is just going to be a quadratic. And the curvature of that quadratic will be this, it'll be minus 1 over sigma squared. So, that's, Let me go all the way back to that. Yeah, if you look here and you work out this likelihood curve, here I just had a likelihood density, a normal density, we take the log scale vertically, it becomes a quadratic. If you then take that and say, well, the thing about a quadratic is that its width is controlled by its curvature, and what happens if you measure the curvature, you will find out that the curvature is minus 1 over the standard deviation. As usual, we have unreliable pens. Minus 1 over the variance is the curvature. Okay, so it's a negative curvature. It's curving this way. And the amount of curvature is related to sigma squared in that way. All right, let's go back through these guys. You can do the same thing with multiple variables. So again, waving my hands and saying it can be shown that. You can, let's see, here is the result that I was just describing for one variable. Down here is for multiple variables. For one variable, you can say, well, if you make estimates, you can show that if you make estimates, maximum likelihood estimates from data sets, they will vary, and they will vary with a variance that is essentially minus 1 over the curvature of the log likelihood. So you can show using this sort of normal normal results off in asymptopia, that the variance of the maximum likelihood estimate you make is the curvature not of the real log likelihood, but of the expected log likelihood. If you take the expectation of the log likelihood, you can show that its curvature is minus 1 over its curvature is equal to the variance of estimates one from the other. Okay. Now, you can do the same with multiple parameters, because it turns out that you can take a matrix of curvatures of different variables, and that's mixed second derivatives, and you can make a matrix of them. And that turns out to be the taking minus the inverse of that, that's a matrix inverse, you get a covariance matrix which tells you about the covariation among all your parameters when you're off in asymptopia with lots of data and you're considering drawing multiple data sets one after another, that all the parameters will vary. They'll vary roughly according to a normal distribution, and they'll have a variance which can be gotten from this. I believe, yeah, you have to have the expectation part here. It's hard to think about, but anyway. So I guess what I'm saying is that in asymptopia, there's a relationship between curvature of the likelihood surface, of the log likelihood surface, and these various variances and covariances. I can't be more precise than that without us making the course go on for an extra quarter.
And so this is the likelihood of the tree?
Please rescue me by asking a question. Yeah.
This is the likelihood of the tree itself, or a likelihood of parameters for the tree?
Let's remember that the word likelihood here is not English.
Okay.
It's in some weird language, Klingon or something. Mm-hmm. And although in English it means the probability of, in Klingon it means it's the number which is the probability of the data given the parameter.
Okay.
So if I rephrase your question, how do I phrase it? Yeah. What is... You talked of the... Say it again.
Okay.
I was overreacting to your use of the word likelihood.
So I guess these values are parameters of the tree, or the tree itself? I guess you're saying it's
horizontal,
parameters.
The horizontal scale that I've just been calling theta is really what you have to think of it as. You can think of there being a bunch of those. It's really multidimensional. They're parameters that are either model parameters, because you may be varying your model, you may be estimating those, or branch lengths.
Okay.
But when people say, well, is the topology a parameter, it turns out that no. It tells you about a region of space, but this is all talking about asymptotic things that are in small enough variation that basically are in one region. So please rescue me more by asking more questions. Yeah.
So when you showed the multidimensional normal distribution curves on the graph, could you think of the topology as being like a giant surface that all of those are slicing through, depending on if you're looking at branch length or...
I showed a curve like this last time to talk about tree space. I'm going to show it again in a little while here, right in this lecture later. It is a curve with regions, which are topologies. Within each region, you vary branch lengths.
Right.
And you get a curve, and then you come to the edge of this region, and it connects to another curve in the other region by arriving at a point where there's a multifurcation, say. I'll come back to that figure. Yeah, but please, it depends on whether your second raising of your hand beat her out like that.
No, that's fine. Just let her.
Yeah.
I don't think it matters.
So can I just kind of check my understanding here? So I have kind of three concepts that I'm linking together. The first is, if you have a huge amount of data, then the distribution of the, like if you plot the likelihood.
The distribution of the summaries
the
of the data.
Likelihood of the plot, of each parameter theta. And theta can be branch lengths or whatever, right? For each parameter theta, the distribution of the log likelihoods, like the log Klingon likelihoods, will approach normalcy.
The distribution of the summaries of your data,
yes,
so like counts of pattern frequencies and such, will approach multivariate normality.
Right.
It will do that. That will mean the curve and as it does that, it will also be true that your likelihood curves will approach multivariate, will look like the same shape as multivariate normals, where likelihood is measured in the parameter space,
right,
which is branch lengths and model parameters.
Okay.
Is that?
Yes. And then to tie all of that together. Wait, I lost part of my mind.
It is hard to keep track of. There's no question it's hard to keep track of, because you're trying to keep track here of, it's all in multiple dimensions, and you're trying to keep track here of the distribution of data, but you're also trying to keep track of the likelihood surface as a function of parameters.
Right.
Yeah.
And the last bit was that the variance of your parameter impacts the shape that the approximately normal-ish distribution of the likelihood of that parameter takes.
It reflects the approximately normal-ish shape of the likelihood surface.
Okay. And that shape is influenced by the variance of the pressure.
It also reflects the variance from trial to trial of the maximum point of the likelihoods.
Okay. Does that approximately?
And this is all transparent and clear, see your psychiatrist, because it really is not so simple. Yeah.
To find the variance, the minus one over sigma.
Yeah.
You use the asymptotic case, even though your data might not reflect that.
You rationalize it by saying, well, maybe we're in that case.
Okay.
And we'll see it in a moment, a little bit of what it looks like.
Okay.
So there's another thing that comes out of this. It's all from the same kind of thinking. And that is that if the likelihood curve is sort of multivariate normal looking, let's consider even a one-dimensional case. It then turns out that the parameters are roughly normally distributed. The parameter estimates, the maximum likelihood estimates of a parameter, and they're normally distributed in this asymptopia. They're normally distributed around the truth. Here's theta hat. It wears a hat because it's an estimate of theta. Here is the true theta, and here is a variance. If you take that difference of the if you somehow magically knew the truth and you took the difference between your estimate and the truth and you scaled it so that it was divided by the standard deviation of this thing, it's then it comes from a standardized normal distribution, that it comes approximately from a normal distribution whose mean is zero, whose expectation is zero, and whose variance is one. Okay. Now that's not a very mysterious or exciting case. It's true if these likelihood curves look normal. They come from shifting the distribution densities through the region. And this is going to be approximately true. And V is also going to be the negative of the curvature of the log likelihood in this limit. And that means that if I take the log of the likelihood, it will turn out that the likelihood at a parameter value theta will be the likelihood, log likelihood at that, will be the log likelihood at the peak, and it will depart from it in a quadratic, that locally the likelihood will look quadratic, and it will have a curvature that is a function of the variance of the parameter. That also means that if I subtract this one off both sides, let's see, what do? I actually subtract this one off both sides, and I move this guy over to that side, and then I double the difference. It's the quantity you get. Now, what is that? It's the log of the likelihood at the peak. In your analysis, you look for the peak of the likelihood, you get the log of the height. if the truth is theta naught, there's a log of the likelihood at the truth if you somehow magically knew the truth, and it is further down the likelihood surface. That is, at any peak you get is at some value that isn't quite right, and that means the log at the truth is a bit lower. And what you can show from all this is that the difference of likelihoods between the peak you find and the value which is true, doubled, is going to be the square of a normal variate, the square of a draw from a standardized normal. And that means the square of a draw from a randomized normal is a chi-square random variable with one degree of freedom. That's how you, sort of how you define it. So it gives you a feel for how big the differences are expected to be between the likelihood, the log likelihood at the peak and the log likelihood at the true value. In other words, going down from the peak until you find the true value, how far down the likelihood surface, the log likelihood surface, are you going to go? And it says that if I propose some value as the truth, I say, well, I think the truth is there. You can say, well, I don't know. Let's take the log of the likelihood that we observe from our data, and let's measure the height of the likelihood curve there, and let's double that and look it up on a chi-square table and see if it's implausibly large. If it's implausibly large, then I can say, well, on this, in this asymptotic analysis, we can reject that. Okay. You can do, I'll just say, you can do the same thing with multiple variables. I'm not going to go through this, except to say the rule you get out for multiple variables is the same, except it's a chi-square with p degrees of freedom, where p is the number of parameters you're varying. There's also a version of that that says, well, I'm interested in testing, looking not at all the parameters, but a subset of them, of q of them, and I just want to know how far down the likelihood surface we have to go to get those parameters to be particular values. And the answer is, in that case, you use the chi-square with the number of parameters that you're in a sense testing, the number that you're trying to discover where they are in the parameter space that you really care about. Okay, let me try to make this a little more. First, I'll show you sort of pictorial thing, and then I'll show you doing it on an actual on some actual data. We will, in general, be having some parameters. We'll have quite a few of them, but if we look at one of them, say the length of a particular branch in the tree, like the branch that separates the human chimp clade from everybody else, and we plot likelihood in the version of log likelihood, we'll get some kind of curve. It won't quite be a normal distribution because we're not in asymptotia. Okay, but what we do to do the test is to say, if somebody comes along and says, what's your best estimate of that branch length? And I say, 0.13. Okay. It's that, there it is. It's the maximum likelihood estimate. And then somebody says, well, I want to know what's a plausible interval that that length of branch can fall in. And I say, aha, let's go down the surface of the log likelihood by an amount which is one half the value of a chi-square that has one degree of freedom. And it's just barely significant at 95% when you look at the chi-square distribution. And you may look at this and say, wait a second, where did that one half come from? It's because we're taking the differences in log likelihoods and doubling them, okay, to get the chi-square. So the differences in likelihoods when you get down to a place where the chi-square is just barely significant, is half. That's the point where it's half the value of a barely significant chi-square. Well, the barely significant amount of a chi-square with 1 degree of freedom is, in fact, with 95%, with a p-value of 5%, so, is 3 point, well, there's three, the chi-square value that reaches the 95% point is 3.841. This is 1.9205, so it's a little bit less than 2, 1.92. And then what you can say is, well, look, in a certain sense, in the sense which is justified asymptotically, so a little dubious for real data, and in this case we're doing one parameter, you can take that to be a kind of confidence interval. It's a likelihood-based confidence interval, justified asymptotically, yada, yada, yada. And you get it by simply chopping, going 1.9205 down and chopping, and finding out what those values are. So there's the interval. It'll say the 95% confidence interval on those lengths will be from here to here, and it's based on the height of log likelihood surfaces. You can also do it by looking at the local curvature and projecting under the assumption that this looks kind of normal. But here, it's a little more robust to do it by just coming down the curve and saying the plausible values, namely values that are inside a 95% sort of confidence interval, are the ones whose likelihoods are close enough to the peak, namely within in the log scale, log likelihood scale, 1.9205. Okay. You can do it in multiple dimensions, too. Here we have two different branch lengths. Here is a likelihood surface. You're looking at confidence intervals of it. They're not nice ellipses. They're a little bit like kidney beans because I'm trying to indicate you aren't quite in the asymptotic phase. There's the peak. What you can say is, well, there's the maximum likelihood estimate, and there is the region of pairs of parameters, namely the length of branch 1 and the length of branch 2, that are inside the joint confidence interval, where that is half the chi-square value, which is significant, with 2 degrees of freedom. There's two parameters here. What's the value? The 95% value for chi-square with 2 degrees of freedom is 5. It's very conveniently, it's 5.99. It's almost exactly 6. So this is 3. Basically, you go down 3 units of log likelihood, and that defines the kidney mean. Okay, which is your joint confidence interval. Okay, you can, if you want, also say, well, I don't care about, we have these two branch lengths, but I don't really care about one of them. You can say, I only care about branch length 2. Then it turns out, you say, well, I'm only interested in specifying one of the parameters, so there's 1 degree of freedom, so now you're back to the case with chi-square with 1 degree of freedom. You come down the curve until you've gone down 1.92, and that might give you values for this parameter that are in this region here, because these are all the values that at best are within 1.92. And you can do it in the other, you imagine doing it in the other parameter. The thing you'll notice about these if you compare them is that you're going with the two parameter confidence interval, you go a bit further down the curve. You go down 3 units instead of 1.92 units. But if you're only interested in one parameter, you go down 1.92. Well, all this is very abstract. Let's consider it with some actual data. This is the 14 species primate mitochondrial data set that I showed you once before using an F84 model. And what I'm doing here is getting log likelihoods for different values. In the F84 model, there is a transition transversion parameter. There also is in the very closely related HKY model, which happened to be using F84. And what I've done is, for different values of that transition transversion parameter, you will recognize doing this because you just did it, you get out different trees, and each tree has a log likelihood. And here we're just plotting the log likelihoods. We're not plotting any representation of the tree. As you go along this curve, you might have the same tree topology, or maybe not. Maybe as you go along, the tree topology might change from time to time. Here is the peak. It is around 28. The horizontal scale I plotted is a log scale, by the way. It looks pretty quadratic when I do this scale down here. There is the peak. Here is the highest log likelihood, which is minus 26.17 or something like that. If we go down, if we're interested just in this one parameter, we should go down 1.92 units, just about 2 units. That's this bar. There is this line. Here, it defines the confidence intervals. If you look down here, they're actually pretty broad. They go from 14 to 54. So you can say, using this, justifying it asymptotically, using it in a real case, plotting out the likelihood curve, and saying, I want to know what the transition transversion parameter is. You say, well, our best estimate is 14, but a rough 95% confidence interval is here, and it goes from 14 to 54. It's rather large. So this data, which is only 232 nucleotides of the 14 species, giving you a rough idea what the transition transversion ratio is. And you can use the log likelihood curve to not only get a single best point estimate, but a rough idea of what interval the estimate is in. Now, I should contrast this to Bayesian inference. With Bayesian inference, you get out a posterior on this thing. And roughly, that interval will be somewhere near the inner 95% of that Bayesian posterior on this particular parameter. It will come out the same. I think you mean in different words. If I'm running a Bayesian inference, I'm messing about with Markov chain Monte Carlo and changing trees and changing parameter values. Now, if our interest were only in what that parameter, we really didn't care what tree of these beasts were, but we want to know about the transition transversion parameter. Then what you do, you may recall, is you take each sample, gets you a whole bunch of parameter values, and then a tree topology. You just concentrate on the one you're interested, the transition transversion parameter. And as you draw samples of all of these things, you just look at that and look at how it distributes itself on its scale. And you get a distribution. You get a histogram. If you then say, okay, I want to report it as an interval, let's do a credible interval, we'll just sort of we'll chop off the upper 2.5% and the lower 2.5% of that histogram and say that's the interval. If you do, it'll actually be moderately close to what you would get out of this likelihood machinery, which doesn't use Bayesian, doesn't use priors, but does have this asymptotic rationale. Whereas the Bayesian inference doesn't have that. Bayesian inference is supposed to be correct whether or not you're in asymptopia. I thought I saw other hands. I saw twitching here. Twitching is dangerous. Scratching your ear is dangerous. Yeah.
One question I had was, would other parameters influence this particular parameter? Let's see if you want to figure out what this parameter is.
Well, they will influence them because they all co-vary. As the transition transversion parameter varies among your Markov chain Monte Carlo samples, other things are varying, and some of them are covariant.
Is there a way to estimate all of them, or does that become really...
Well, you can collect a two-dimensional histogram, mm-hmm. or a three-dimensional histogram, but at some point you get too many dimensions, and the histogram is kind of full of holes unless you do vast numbers of samples. But you can also just look marginally at what one parameter is doing. That's the marginal view of the histogram. But you can collect a multivariate histogram, and you can say, this thing varies, it's somewhere in this range. When you get up to high values in this range, this other parameter we're interested in gets a little low, and then we get down here and the other one gets a little high on average, they co-vary. Mm-hmm. Right now we're just asking questions about the one parameter. Okay, so up till now, actually, I was on schedule for the whole course, but we're clearly falling behind schedule here. I will continue this mostly next time. I will just start by saying, I'll repeat this next time, one of the lovely things you can do with this is use it to do a likelihood ratio. This thing is called the likelihood ratio test and the LRT. It's very old. It goes back into the 1920s for other statistical applications. You can use it to test whether the branch lengths fit a molecular clock. If you have a tree, and these are all branch lengths, if there's a molecular clock, one of the things you can say is that this branch should equal that branch in length. So V1 equals V2. This one should equal that one, V4 equals 5. This branch should equal the sum of one of these plus V6, so say V1 plus V6 equals V3. And this plus that should equal this plus that. There it is, it's V3, well, it's going down not this plus this, but say this V3 plus V7 should equal V4 plus V8. It will turn out that this last one is not one that we need to look at, but I'll show you why next time. But the point about this is to test the molecular clock in a likelihood ratio test framework, you are in effect testing whether these equations hold. You're testing certain constraints on the branch lengths. And what we're going to see at the beginning of next time is that we can do a run, get the highest possible likelihood with these constraints holding, and get the highest possible likelihood without them being constrained. And we can compare those two likelihoods, double the difference, and look it up on a chi-square distribution, and get a good overall test of clockness. And we're going to start out next time at that point, and I'll talk a little bit more about likelihood ratio tests. And then we'll move on later in the week to the bootstrap, which is related but different.